Governor Tony Evers releases his 2019-2021 state budget proposal on February 28th. So far, he's said he'll include more funding for schools, a women's health initiative, higher pay for correctional officers, legalization of medical marijuana, and funding for a grant to fix polluted private wells. The legislature is next in line to craft their own version and tweak the bill. What will they make of the governor's proposal? What will they include in their own version of the budget bill? When the governor finally signs the budget bill into law, will it reflect the priorities of Western Wisconsin? Thank you for tuning in this Monday morning on the Ideas Network stations here in Western Wisconsin. I'm Rich Kramer. Two members of the state legislature join me this hour to consider the next state budget and its meaning for our region. This is the West Side. Joining us by phone, we have Representative Romaine Quinn, State Representative Romaine Quinn. He's a Republican from Barron. He represents the 75th State Assembly District. The 75th includes Barron County, Southern Washburn County, and parts of Polk, St. Croix, and Dunn counties. He joins us by phone from the district. Representative Romaine Quinn, welcome to the West Side.
Good morning, Rich. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. Joining me in the studio is State Senator Jeff Smith. He's a Democrat from Eau Claire. He represents the 31st State Senate District. His district includes Pepin and Buffalo counties and parts of Pierce, Eau Claire, Trempealeau, and Jackson counties. He's here with me in the studio, nice and toasty, in Eau Claire. Senator Smith, welcome to the West Side.
Always glad to be here, Rich.
Good to have you. We're glad to have you. We have a phone line open for you, our listeners. Actually, we've got three. What funding priorities would you like to see for Western Wisconsin? What would you do? What do you think of the governor's proposals so far? We have three phone lines that are open. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got questions about how the budget process works or if you've got input. 1-800-228-5615. So, as I mentioned, there were some kind of hints, and some are less hints than just outright priorities that the governor has put forth. But one of the first things that I noticed is that during the campaign trail and also since he's taken office, Governor Evers has talked about three funding the schools at two-thirds, I believe. And to do that, the spending for the state's K-12 public schools would have to be going up by $1.4 billion. That's what Governor Evers has introduced. During an interview last Tuesday, Evers doubled down on that plan. So, Jeff Smith, I'll start with you. That's a lot of new money that would be slated for education. We did see some increases in the last budget. Pretty significant increases for state education and K-12 schools, also some specialized rural funding. So, is Evers on the right track for the future?
It's a good start, Rich. Keep in mind that the increase from last budget came only after a significant amount of cuts the previous three budgets from the previous governor. So, we're glad that they took it upon themselves to try to win some votes and increase last time, but now we need to catch up, and this is just about catching up. And so, when you mention new spending, it's more of a shifting of priorities, is the way I look at it.
And Representative Quinn, your thoughts on Governor Evers' proposal for $1.4 billion to be added to the state's budget for schools? You were a big proponent of the rural sparsity aid increases that came at the end of, during Governor Walker's term. Do you think Evers is heading in the right direction?
I think it's definitely a good conversation starter. I mean, we'll have to see what other priorities he has in the budget. I mean, if you're talking about spending $1.4 billion just on one area, and we know, for instance, you know, we have issues in our correctional system, which he's obviously supportive of. You know, we came out, again, with more support for more DAs, higher pay for public defenders. And, of course, we want to give our state employees a raise, too, over this next budget cycle. So I don't know if we can put all of our eggs in one basket, but if that's where he wants to start the conversation, fine. But, of course, we have a large state and a lot of different ideas. And right now, I just came from a listening session, and we got priorities from broadband to you name it that we want to try to invest in over the next 2 years. So it's a point we can start, but and just off my first glance, I think $1.4 billion is a little unrealistic. You can say it's a shift in investing priorities, but that's a lot of new money above and beyond any kind of cuts that the senator referenced. So we'll see, again, how to balance that with all the needs all across the state.
One of the proposals also that Evers mentioned was an increase in special education funding for the state's public schools, around $600 million going towards that. So Evers said that special education funding has been flat for the last 12 years. Will this idea be able to pass the legislature? Romaine Quinn, first of all, special education funding flat, is that true from your point of view, from what you know?
Yeah, and as you recall, I spent a lot of time on the Blue Ribbon Commission for school funding, where we traveled the state and crisscrossed different communities and school districts and talked to stakeholders from all over. And this was definitely an issue that came up, and that's why it was a recommendation in our commission report as well. And we threw out a number of different numbers to increase that. So, yes, especially when you take into account inflation, the percentage we're paying of the cost of special ed is definitely down. I know the governor wants to invest about $600 million. I don't know how high of a percentage that gets us. But obviously, we can definitely get to a point easily, in my mind, of where it used to be. And I think, that may be a couple hundred million dollars in my mind, but I think it's a reasonable start to try and truly funding the needs of special education students in our district. And how do we go about funding that? So we are talking, I've talked to a number of special education administrators across the 75th Assembly District, and it's not only just about funding the cost of the student, but even finding the professionals. So, maybe a component of special education funding should be trying to attract and retain quality professionals that will even go into the profession to begin with. So a number of issues around there, but it's definitely something that I think can be bipartisan and that we all want to further address for our schools, especially that most vulnerable population we have in our school buildings.
Senator Smith, $1.4 billion could be a sticking point in terms of agreement between Democrats and the Republicans in the legislature, but do you see bipartisan support for a special education increase in state funding?
Well, it's interesting how there's been a lot of shift in the philosophy of our Republican majority in the legislature these days, and I hope that they're serious about this shift towards more progressive values and supporting our schools after making all these cuts over the years. And the reference to criminal justice reform, and last week it was putting money into our homeless population. And I'm really excited that the Republican legislators have seen the light and are ready to invest money in people instead of their Foxconn types of tax credits.
Foxconn will come up later in the program.
I'm sure it will.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got questions or comments for our guests. I am joined by State Senator Jeff Smith. He's the senator for the 31st State Senate District. He is a Democrat, lives just outside of the city of Eau Claire. Representative Romaine Quinn is a Republican state representative. He represents the 75th State Assembly District. He is from Barron. 1-800-228-5615. We go to the phones now. Steve Intrigo, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, good morning. I was recently down to Madison as part of the Superior Days annual citizen lobby.
Mm-hmm.
And we made as our number one legislative issue raising Medicaid reimbursement rates for long-term care in both institutions and in particular the home care situation. Governor Evers just recently created by executive order a task force to deal with the direct care workforce shortage crisis. So we really need to raise Medicaid reimbursement rates, and I'm interested in hearing from your guests whether or not you think Governor Evers will do that, or if not, then how we address that workforce shortage crisis.
Excellent question. Thanks so much, Steve. And also Superior Days a lobby effort from northern Wisconsin. I'm well familiar with that. As a student, I covered the trip, and it was really interesting to see all the advocates from the region. So, Senator Smith, let me start with you on this. I mean, Medicaid reimbursement rates, when I think of these things, I think, well, that's a federal issue. What can the state do? And do you think that there's an appetite in the legislature or in the governor's office to increase them?
So Medicaid is a partnership between state and federal.
Right.
And we absolutely have a lot to say about that. First of all, let's take the Medicaid expansion that has been hanging and sitting there in Washington, of our tax dollars sitting there in Washington, D.C. for the last 8 years because of ideology and politics. We're playing with people's lives. This is, now's the time. We are in a crisis. This is a crisis situation of our direct caregivers are underpaid. You can talk to most anyone who receives that service will tell you that it's hard to keep people working in that industry, and so that they can rely on the same people showing up day after day. You know, every 3 months or so, having to retrain someone to take care of them is a serious problem. When you can make $15 an hour and go to Woodman's compared to making $10-$12 an hour to really do some of the most difficult work when you're caring for someone in their home or in any other situation, you know, what are you going to choose? You know, so we really got to appreciate the workforce that it should be trained, should be professional, and should be making a living wage. And because, by the way, I'm a baby boomer, and we're going to flood that market very soon in our country. So we need to be paying attention to this issue.
If I could just follow up, Senator Smith, Governor Walker, or former Governor Walker's rationale for not accepting that federal reimbursement or that expansion money was that, you know, his argument was that the federal government couldn't be relied on to fund that in the future and that the states could be left with a big tab. So, isn't there any truth to that?
That's a false equivalency. So you're going to leave our money sitting in Washington rather than take the chance of taking that money to help people now. Let's just quit playing those political games and making those sorts of excuses, because our money that we've paid into the federal government is sitting there and should be here helping our own citizens in Wisconsin. By the way, it's been 8 years. 8 years. And I don't see that going away.
Representative Romain Quinn, your thoughts on the, you know, the caller's questions about whether or not we are in a place where the legislature and or the governor are ready to and willing to increase reimbursement rates.
And I think that's a conversation that comes up every cycle, to be honest. And that's why, you know, I was a big supporter of the DSH program payment. So for hospitals that take a disproportionately high amount of Medicaid patients, we have separate payments to them to help support them providing care for, again, our most needy population. So will it go up? Yes. I know last budget we tried to force millions more down through the program to get to our personal caregivers and workers to raise those wages. You know, it's kind of complicated because we do have the MCO system, so, and we've had some kind of mixed bag results on that. So, again, whether it's our nursing homes or those that provide, you know, care for our developmentally disabled, you know, they need to be paid a fair wage. And again, especially when we're expecting them to do some of the hardest work there is. And unfortunately, that sector is feeling the same as many of our businesses with the growth we've been having. It's hard to find good people because everyone's working and every employee can be selective because there's so many job opportunities out there now. So as the senator mentioned, you know, you can walk into Quick Trip and start at $15 an hour now. That wasn't the case 8 years ago. So again, how do we catch up to the fact that our economy has grown? Workers can be selective. We're competing for workers, and we have to make sure that our other sectors that we don't necessarily think of competing for employees actually pay a fair wage to those people that are doing some of the most important work. When you talk about taking the Medicaid expansion, it's important to remember that, you know, when you take the expansion dollars, we're not talking about providing more access for people. You know, you're talking about shifting 76,000 people that currently get coverage on the private Obamacare exchanges and putting them back on a state program. So at this point, I'm not sure why, if we support the Affordable Care Act and believe the exchanges are provide for good coverage, you want to take people off of that and put them back onto a state program when they already receive subsidized help on those exchanges. So there's a lot more conversation we have on that issue, and we shouldn't be building a budget around taking expansion and then using healthcare dollars to spend on other things. So it's important that when we talk about, you know, freeing up $100 million or $200 million by taking the Medicaid expansion, you know, we shouldn't be turning that around and spending it on schools or other things. So when we talk about $1.4 billion for schools or increasing for correctional officers and other needs that we legitimately have, we need to keep that in context of how much money do we have and where else do we need to invest. For instance, you know, raising the wages for our personal caregivers.
If I could just follow up, Representative Quinn, you know, I've heard this argument that, you know, these people are already covered, this pool of people is already covered on the exchange, but yet we're, as a state, we are in a lawsuit to undo the Affordable Care Act, in effect. So does that mean that these people are kind of in limbo at this point?
No, I don't believe so, because I think, you know, certain things are going to continue to exist regardless of the outcome of this lawsuit. And again, we create laws and create policy and adjust those every time we get handed something down from the federal government, just like we did with the Affordable Care Act. You know, we had our HRSA pools. Those went away. You know, we had different programs to help people maintain coverage. Some of that changed. So we will adapt and change and try to provide the best care we can. And again, what's different from Wisconsin and many of the states that took the expansion dollars, we were already doing a really good job at covering a vast majority of our population. Almost, I think, 96%+ of Wisconsinites currently have insurance. Now, again, what's the cost of that? And we recognize in the state that the Affordable Care Act hasn't been affordable, which is why we sunk hundreds of millions of dollars to buy down premiums for those that can only find coverage on the exchanges and who are seeing 40, 50, or higher percent increases. So we recognize the Affordable Care Act is not the silver bullet. It needs fixing. I think the federal government needs to get its act together and do that. We've tried to patch it while we've been here. And again, we have high coverage rates, and we are covering everybody on the state program up to 100% of the poverty level. And anyone above that can get those federal subsidies on the exchanges.
As we know, it was never the silver.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. As we know, it was never the silver bullet. It was the first step. It was the first step towards making sure that everyone was covered through a potential Medicare for all type of plan. That's where we need to move in with the federal government. But instead, we have states like Wisconsin has been one of those states to try to undermine the Affordable Care Act, because it has Obama's name on it. So we need to get the politics out of this. We need to realize we're talking about people's lives. We need to bring that money back to our state of Wisconsin. We need to free up money for other purposes, just as Representative Quinn just mentioned. If we're going to put money into schools, let's be doing that instead of having to cover up for the reason for not taking the Medicaid expansion.
With that, let's take our first break. Governor Tony Evers will release his 2019-2021 biennial state budget proposal on Thursday, February 28th. Today on the West Side, we're talking with two lawmakers from Western Wisconsin about what might be in that budget and some of the things that we've already heard are to be included. What will they prioritize when the legislature gets a hold of the budget and makes its own changes? Our guests include Representative Romaine Quinn, who joins us by phone. He is a Republican and represents the 75th State Assembly District. Senator Jeff Smith is here in our Eau Claire studio. He is a Democrat who represents the 31st State Senate District. We'll pick up our conversation when we return. You can call in at 1-800-228-5615. We have three phone lines open for you. If you've got a question or a comment, do dial 1-800-228-5615. I'm Rich Kramer. This is the West Side on the Ideas Network stations of Western Wisconsin, 88.3 WHWC and 88.7 WRFW.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the Mead Witter Foundation of Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin, supporting the activities of the citizens of Central and Northern Wisconsin and encouraging your support of Wisconsin Public Radio programming. Support also comes from Lamer's Bus Lines, celebrating their 75th anniversary. School bus drivers are neighbors, friends, and family, and Lamer's is now hiring drivers for routes and trips. GoLamers.com/employment.
Welcome back to the West Side. Next week, we'll look at how school funding in the state budget might affect our region. Two local superintendents and a policy expert will be here for that discussion. That comes after Governor Tony Evers releases his budget proposal this Thursday. Then we'll get a chance to see where the governor's at politically on the issues, and then we will soon hear where the legislature, controlled by Republicans, will be at as well. Today we're talking with the two state lawmakers from our region about what they would like to see in the 2019-2021 state budget. Governor Tony Evers has indicated some of his proposals for that budget already. He will release it in its entirety on February 28th. That's 3 days from today. We're joined by State Representative Romaine Quinn, who is with us by phone. He's a Republican and represents the 75th State Assembly District. That's Barron County, Southern Washburn County, and parts of Polk, St. Croix, and Dunn counties. Senator Jeff Smith is with me in our Eau Claire studio. He's a Democrat who represents the 31st State Senate District. That includes Pepin and Buffalo counties and parts of Pierce, Eau Claire, Tremplo, and Jackson counties. Listeners, the phone lines are open for you. What are you hearing in your conversations about the state budget or some of the policies that have been floated by the governor? What funding priorities are most important for you? How might this budget compare with those of the past? 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. 1-800-228-5615. So we're in a new era of divided government here in Wisconsin, and this has led to some competing proposals already that ultimately seek to do the same things. One of the most notable examples are the dueling tax cut proposals from the Republican majority in the state legislature and from Governor Tony Evers. Republicans introduced a $490 million tax cut that would have been paid for by a projected budget surplus of nearly $700 million. Governor Evers vetoed that bill, saying that he opposed paying for tax cuts with funds that aren't guaranteed in the future. Instead, he's proposing a similar tax cut in his state budget that would be paid for by capping a tax credit on manufacturers and essentially increasing taxes on them by around $220 million annually, according to media reports. So judging by the partisanship that we've already seen this year, is there any hope, Jeff Smith, I'll start with you, that Republicans and Democrats, or the Democratic governor, will be able to compromise on a tax cut proposal?
Well, we definitely have a long ways to go in this partisanship issue. Starting with the fact that in December, this lame duck session came in and stole many of the powers of the governor away from the governor and from our attorney general. That should never have happened. That started us off on a very bad footing, and we have a long ways to go, even further than we thought. So then of course, now we've got leaders of this legislature, Voss and Fitzgerald, but Voss notably, in playing this game of trying to gamesmanship of I call it of trying to propose their own ideas that they know are coming in the budget, but they want to be in front of the budget when in fact, you know, let's just do the right thing. We're at least on the Democratic side, we're keeping our powder dry. We want to see what's in the budget. We want to see what the governor proposes. And to propose a tax cut that the governor talked about for the whole campaign season and then and pretend like it's their idea and they know how to do this and it's a real bipartisan effort. Well, if it was bipartisan in the first place, I would have been invited to the press conference that they held in Altoona. And as well as other Democrats around the state would have been invited to those press conferences and maybe be included in the original proposal of how we should pay for this. Now, a one-time tax cut is what they're talking about because this is what they supposed, I don't really like to pretend like there's really a surplus, but the supposed surplus out there is for one-time tax cut. What Governor Evers is proposing is a sustained tax cut by capping that manufacturing tax credit, which, by the way, is only being only benefiting like 30 billionaires or millionaires in the state of Wisconsin. So let's get real about this. Let's talk truly bipartisan of trying to do the right thing for everybody in the middle class and beyond.
Can capping that tax credit pass the legislature in any form? I mean, will that Is that realistic?
You know, Rich, everything is realistic in my view. I always continue to hold out hope that already, like we said, we've heard a lot of talk today that sounds pretty progressive and sounds like we're going to get along just fine. So let's see if we can do the right thing. What's more important, the tax cut, making sure that middle class, hardworking families actually have some money in their pocket, or their small number of millionaires that they want to give a tax credit to? We have to see what the priorities really are.
Representative Quinn, let's go to you now. We've got these two plans. I believe you were at the unveiling of the at the Altoona press conference when the Republican plan came out. We're at loggerheads seemingly with kind of the same goal in mind. So, first of all, do you think that any kind of a shift or capping of manufacturer tax credits can survive the assembly? And meanwhile, do you think that Governor Evers would ever sign something that uses one-time surplus funds for a tax cut?
Well, I would like to start just by knowing how much money does Senator Smith think the state of Wisconsin needs? So we're lapsing between $600 and $700 million in over to the next state budget. And on top of that, our fiscal bureau is projecting we're going to take in another $1.7 billion in additional revenue on top of current spending over the next 2 years. So that's about $2.4 billion to spend more than what we're spending currently now. And out of that $2.4 billion, Wisconsin Republicans said, let's meet Governor Evers at his campaign pledge. So what's funny is we're not being bipartisan, even though we passed the exact same tax cut he campaigned on. So let's meet him in the middle. Let's take $340 million, which would be ongoing. It's not one time. It is ongoing. We're reducing the rate for those middle-income filers and spend that and give that actually back to the people that paid it in. So I don't know how we get more bipartisan than that. And again, compromise, yes. We should all try to meet in the middle. So our plan uses the exact same income threshold. I know a lot of Republicans, like we usually do, would like to do across-the-board simplification of our tax code, but we said, fine, we will do exactly the parameters that he set out for the middle-class tax cut. On the flip side, we're not going to raise taxes on someone else to pay for it, especially when we know we have record-level funding coming in. So I don't know how it's considered compromise when Republicans have to do only what Governor Evers wants. You know, that's not compromise. So what we said is we will do the middle-income tax cut exactly lined out how the governor wants. And again, the majority of this money is going to filers making between $30,000 and $40,000 a year. They're going to see their net Wisconsin state tax liability cut almost in half. So how do you not sign that? And it's funny because our state Senate Democrats spent 4 hours on the floor talking about why we should honor Colin Kaepernick on a resolution. And then they spent 3 hours saying why we can't, even though we have $2.4 billion, give middle-income filers the exact same tax cut that their own governor campaigned on. So, yes, I wish it would have been partisan. I wish we would have had some across-the-aisle votes, and I wish the governor wouldn't have vetoed it. But we can have this discussion again, I guess, in the budget overall. But my question again would be, how much does both the senator and the governor think we need in additional spending? Because this will be the biggest budget in state history. And I think there are ways that we can fund the priorities we all care about, broadband, schools, paying our state employees and personal caregivers a fair wage, without turning around and raising taxes on other people at the same time.
If I could follow up, I always run the risk of oversimplifying things because Lord knows I don't see the books and don't understand it the way that lawmakers are kind of required to. But at this point, it sounds like, the argument is that the surplus, if revenues do decline, if we go through another downturn, that this would this tax cut that the Republicans introduced and that was vetoed by Governor Evers, wouldn't that be unfunded at that point?
Well, that's like saying we shouldn't give an increase to schools either because we don't know if the money's going to come in. I mean, we build our budget based off projections, and our staff do a good job. We don't go hog wild and build budgets off of 7% growth or anything like that. I mean, this new increase is being built off, I think, a 2.5% growth and maybe 3.5% in the second year. So, but that's what we do. We base our budgets off growth at the end of the year. If the money didn't come in, then we have to make adjustments. But if we're afraid of spending any dollars, and I don't consider it spending, letting people keep more of their own money is not spending in my mind. But if we're afraid of spending dollars because of a downturn, then why are we talking about a $1.4 billion increase for schools when that's based off a projection? So I kind of reject the idea that there won't be enough money going forward, when on the flip side, the other side wants to spend a pretty substantial amount, and again, using that just based off of projection. So I think there's more than enough money to do both. And I'm in Cumberland right now in the library, right, just for the listening session, and there are two businesses in my district that I specifically talked to about the manufacturing and ag tax credit, and they said that is the difference between building something here in Cumberland or in China. And that's the difference between investing $200 million in a 3M plant in Menominee or doing it in Iowa, who has the same tax credit. So to just use talking points of, oh, it only benefits a millionaire, this and that, these are real businesses where real people in our communities go to work every day, and they make their investment decisions off of state policy. So it's much bigger than just the couple talking points we use when it comes to the manufacturing and ag tax credit.
Senator Smith, you'd like to
respond? Well, yeah, it does only benefit millionaires. And just remember that particular tax credit was snuck into the budget in 2011 at midnight or after midnight, the day before or the night before it was passed. So it didn't get any scrutiny, didn't get any hearings, and it was just snuck in there as a favor for millionaires. Now, the idea that this is that their particular tax cut is ongoing, well, it only works off of like you said, Rich, off of if there's a potential surplus, this potential surplus. That's not guaranteed. We know that. We know that how the economy goes up and down. What we're talking about is who should have the advantage of getting a tax cut? Should it be thousands, hundreds of thousands, or millions of people, or should it be a handful of millionaires that play favorites?
With that, let's go to the phones now. We've got Dan in Birchwood, who's been on the line for a bit. Dan, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind? Whoops. Actually, I'll take the call first. Dan in Birchwood, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, thanks for taking my call, Rich. Yep. We run a fishing resort here in Birchwood, and I would also like to just point out that for us, renewable, and this whole area, renewable energy presents a really great opportunity. Wisconsin spends about $14 billion every year to import fossil fuels like coal, oil, and natural gas from other states. So if we developed our renewable energy resources here in the state, we could be keeping more of that money right here and putting people to work manufacturing, installing, and maintaining these systems. Solar install is one of the fastest growing jobs, and I've been talking to some of the companies that install solar panels in Shell Lake and Hayward, and they just can't find enough people to work for them because they've got so much demand for solar. So additionally, if we continue to burn these fossil fuels, they produce pollution that harms our health, the environment, and warms the planet. And some of our biggest economic sectors like agriculture, tourism, and forestry all rely on a healthy environment and a stable climate. So what sorts of priorities and bipartisan agreement can there be in the budget on expanding renewable energy and reducing the risk of a warming climate? And I also did want to just say a quick thank you to Representative Quinn for being a leader on these issues. And he's come out to our resort to see our solar array and our electric car charger. So I appreciate his attention to this very important issue.
Thanks for the call, Dan. And I know I've met Dan. He's a frequent attendee of these listening sessions, so he is doing his civic duties. So, Romaine Quinn, Representative Quinn, what kind of priorities might be included in the budget, you know, or in standalone legislation with regard to renewable energy and increasing that infrastructure?
Yeah, and just hello to Dan as well. And they run an awesome small family resort just north of Birchwood, and they got quite a story to tell, and it's pretty neat because it just shows how much the market has changed for renewables. So the market and private investment have driven down the cost of renewable energy to the point where it is now feasible for large and small-scale users to operate and benefit their bottom line. So any opportunity we can to make free energy, and here's a issue I think where conservatives can do a better job messaging as well. We shouldn't just oppose renewable energy to oppose. A lot are just opposed because of subsidies, and I understand that. So I think there needs to be a more transparent method to say, how much are we actually subsidizing one source of fuel over another, and have that legitimate conversation. So I'm personally looking at trying to develop solar on my own home. Unfortunately, I built it. It doesn't face south, so I have to figure that out. But it's coming. So, but what role does the state play? In some instances, it can be getting out of the way, because we know a lot of these issues on development of certain renewable technology comes down on just siting and placing of these, and what regulations do we have in place that actually stop the development because we have land use restrictions or others that prevent that from happening. So it's very hard to turn around and say, should the state invest physical dollars? Should that be for the private sector? Should our local cooperatives that provide our infrastructure for energy take a bigger role on that? And then, of course, we have the overall conversation of net metering and what rates should be paid for those that send electricity back into the system. And not only that, there's even environmental components, you know, where we have issues of groundwater contamination where our geology is different in the state. You know, how can we use digesters on large farms so we don't have as much land spreading to not only, one, produce energy, but to combat the runoff issues that we have? And how can those roles, you know, play hand in hand together? So there's definitely room for work. I'd be interested. I don't know what the governor's going to come out in his budget specifically. We'll wait and see on that. But I think renewable energy is a place where both sides can find some agreement to say, hey, it's becoming cheaper, it's viable, it's better for the bottom line for the state and for the environment. I think there's an area where we can work together on for sure.
Maybe a bit of an icebreaker. Senator Smith, what would you like to include as far as, you know, state, whether it be subsidies or credits for manufacturers or, you know, training for installers? Is there anything the state can do to improve? What we've seen is a lot of growth. I mean, the solar farms that the utilities are doing is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I am. I've been excited by my own energy cooperative has a very large solar field, and now I see an XL Energy. I drive by theirs every day over here in the south side of Eau Claire. It's an exciting new field, right? But and in fact, energy jobs are renewable energy jobs are the fastest growing in this country. It's the direction we're going. And it shouldn't just be about jobs, but that's important if that's what the motivation is. It shouldn't just be about economy, but if that's what it is, then the motivation's there. Because the fact is, we're doing great damage to this planet, and we have been for a long time. We have a responsibility to put every effort we can, whether it be through government subsidies, whether it be through private investment, through our just plain citizen responsibility, to try to do all we can to change the way we burn our energy and make sure it's renewable energy and clean energy. So I'm all for whatever chance, you know, and whatever way we can go to make that happen as a policymaker, decision maker, as an activist. So that said, you know, all the discussion and argument about credits, tax credits, maybe it should be very, very much targeted towards that ad industry instead of going to the wrong places, in my opinion.
With that, let's take our final break here on the West Side. We're joined by State Representative Romaine Quinn. He represents the 75th Assembly District. He lives in Barron. Senator Jeff Smith is with us. He's a Democrat from the 31st State Senate District, joins us in the studio. We've got phone lines open. We have a caller on hold right now. Scott, we'll get to you right after the break. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. We're talking about the state budget. Governor Tony Evers will give a budget address and release his proposal on Thursday, the 28th. And then after that, there's going to be a lot of kicks at the cat, as they say. So what do you think should be included in the governor's budget? What do you think about the priorities that have been announced so far? 1-800-228-5615. We've got the state senator and the state representative with us for the rest of the hour. This is the West Side.
This is Melissa Ingalls. I'll be hosting a holiday vacations trip to Alaska and the Inside Passage in July. The trip includes a three-night cruise on the MS Volendam, departing from Vancouver and moving up the fjord-like coastal waterway edged by snow-capped mountains. The cruise stops in Juneau before ending in Skagway, where the trip continues by rail and motor coach. Details on the Alaska and Inside Passage trip are available at wpr.org/travel.
Support for WPR comes from UW-Madison. UW-Madison is committed to helping students increase their earning potential through finding careers and job offers, as well as enrolling in graduate or professional school. impact.wisc.edu. Support also comes from the University of Wisconsin-Stout, offering online undergraduate and graduate degrees and professional education and certificate options for adult learners. uwstout.edu/WPR.
How do you select the right pair of reading glasses? Coming up next hour, Larry Mueller and his guests talk about finding the best glasses for you and also how they may help with the effects of blue light from our electronic devices that we all stare at so much, or most of us anyway. That's after 11 on the Larry Mueller Show today. Welcome back to the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. This hour, we're discussing the upcoming state budget. Governor Evers will deliver his budget address on February 28th. That's this Thursday. Then the legislature will get to work making tweaks on the document, or even there's some speculation that there could be a totally separate budget bill introduced, but that remains to be seen. Two guests are with us for the rest of the hour to talk about it. They are State Senator Jeff Smith. He represents the 31st State Senate District, and Representative Romaine Quinn joins us by phone. He's a Republican representing the 75th State Assembly District. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. Let's go to Scott in Eau Claire. Scott, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Morning, guys. So I had 2 points I wanted to bring up quick. I hadn't heard talked about, but has been in the news and talked about with the governor's stance on the gas tax at the pump. If that is something that is still being discussed, if that's considered funding for the new proposals, as it stands like right now on a 1 gallon of gasoline, it's 30.9 cents is the federal tax, but the state tax is at 18.6, and then 24.4 cents of every gallon on diesel, which in really is still already quite a bit. You're already at that, almost 10% of every gallon is just state tax, let alone the 30.9 cents for federal. If that is something that is still looking at taking a hike. Because then, while you're generating more tax, that's just going to end up getting passed on to the consumer in the end. So I don't see the real net benefit by it. And then also with payroll, I hear everybody wants to put more money in the working man's pocket. Work hard to keep your money. I have one problem with that. I work a job that requires a lot of overtime. I go into every week. If I only have 52 hours in at the end of the work week, that's a short week for me.
Mm-hmm.
When I hit 58 hours in the week, I start losing money per hour worked. And then when I hit 65 hours in a work week, I even lose more. I feel like I'm being penalized for working more. I'm out there, I'm working, 60, 70-hour weeks, and when I hit that sort of threshold, the taxes just keep impounding and pounding on each other.
Sure.
So I'm finding a little bit of trouble where we want to keep the money in your pocket, yet, hey, thanks for working all them hours. Here, let me just take a little more things.
I hear you loud and clear. Scott, thanks so much for calling. Let me put the question to Senator Jeff Smith first. Let's talk about the gas tax. I mean, that was part of there were discussions all along the campaign trail from Governor Evers that it's time to take a look at that. We've also heard bipartisan people telling us revenue. We need revenue. So gas tax, you expect to see it in the budget? The governor says as much. Do you expect it to stay in the budget?
I expect that we'll see something in the budget regarding that. And of course, and I don't want to beat this dead horse anymore, but we should never have eliminated indexing, and we wouldn't have these political battles to raise a tax. But that's neither here nor there. It's been done, and hopefully if we do raise a tax, we can bring indexing back and we quit having this argument. But on the other hand, we just got done discussing clean energy. And because we're moving towards electric cars, we've got higher mileage on our cars, gas cars we do have. That's not going to be the answer in the future, and it's probably not the answer now. Now, I'm not a fan of tolling. I actually am opposed to that. So I think we need to come up with something new and original. It might be based on your miles on your car or whatever it is. But the fact is, nothing's for free, and we all use our roads, and we all need our roads. Our economy needs our roads. Our tourism needs our roads. We need our roads to go to the doctor and our school. So it's something that's got to be paid for. We have to believe, we have to be committed to paying for it. And I think we need some original ideas out there.
How about with regards to payroll taxes and income tax at the state level? And for people that are in Scott's position that feel like they're being, you know, penalized for working more hours.
Mm-hmm. You know, Scott makes a good argument for why we need to throw our tax code out and start all over. There's all sorts of good reasons to do that, and he just made another argument for that. So I'd like to, in fact, talk to Scott. Scott should call my office and explain those levels at 58 hours and 65 hours, where how he's losing money when he gets to that level, because it'll help us all to understand what levels we should be concerned about.
State Representative Romaine Quinn, how about, let's start with the gas tax. There are some expectations that it will be part of the state budget and in the transportation portion of it. Do you think that will survive?
And that's hard to tell right now, Rich. Like as you said, we get a crack at the budget as well as the legislature. But, you know, I've been very vocal about this, that our rural roads absolutely need more funding. We have a good interstate system. Our backbone of that system is in good shape. You know, I drive 53 to 94 all the way to Madison, and at least that section, you know, it's a good system. But it's your rural roads. When you're on pavement life cycles of 130 years, you obviously just can't keep up. So the point is, one, we need to actually shift where we spend the dollars we have. So a lot of those mega projects in the state needed to be done. A lot of them are wrapping up, and now we should see a shift in those dollars more towards local road aids, in my mind. And frankly, why on earth would I vote for a gas tax increase if all that's going to do is fast-track another project in southeastern Wisconsin? Now, again, all roads need attention, you know, not just my part of the state or my district. Others do, too. But we need to find a certain amount of fairness in that as well. You know, we could even look at minimum markup. You know, we could cut minimum markup in half right now, raise the gas tax accordingly. There'd be no change at the pump, and the state could take in over another $100 million that they could put towards roads and infrastructure. So there are a number of ways we can get at this, but you got to make sure you do it right and that it's spent where it's supposed to be spent. Unfortunately, the Republican legislature, we've been enacting a number of different reforms through different audits and things like that to make sure every dollar we're spending goes as far as it can. But now, again, we're to the point where we can't borrow our way out of our road situation. And so we'll see what potential solution looks like. I guess at one note of agreement here on this show, I am not a fan of tolls either. So Senator Smith and I can work on that issue together maybe. But I am not a fan of tolls personally. Someday in the future, would that be part of the solution? I'm not sure. Not something that I generally am supportive of at this time. In terms of the gentleman's tax situation, it's funny because when I first got elected, I tried to talk to our attorneys and said, how can we do a bill where the state doesn't take any income tax out of your check after your 40 hours you work? And they basically kind of said, well, it's too complicated and there's no way to do it. So, but your story, again, just proves the point where, one, you have a right to your money, and how much time do you work? How much should that be taxed from your paycheck? You know, I think 40 hours for Uncle Sam is enough myself, but we'll see how that plays into tax brackets and your end of your income as well. So, the problem with the progressive income tax system, I understand that people should pay their fair share, and frankly, our top bracket pays 40% of our income taxes in the state, but you're going to have a lot of middle-income people whose wife has a good job, too, and you have a good job, and you borderline on that next bracket. Well, why on earth would I take a raise or promotion if I'm going to fall into the 22% instead of the 12% and actually cost me money? So there's got to be an honest conversation about income tax policy as well when we move forward.
Let's take the last call of the day. Jim in Polk County, you're on the line. What's on your mind? And if you could be brief with your question, we are real close to the top of the hour.
Yep, thank you. I appreciate it. I just got my tax bill for 2019. Uh-oh. 49.5% from $4,000 to $7,000. A for sale sign is going up on my house. I can't afford to pay that. We're reasonably close to the Twin Cities. My taxes are higher than people I know in the suburbs of the Twin Cities. Obviously, this is a Walker situation. And finally, just tell me, are you guys going to join the lawsuit against the action that the president's taking? Thanks.
Okay. Thanks for that. Appreciate it, Jim. We lost a little bit of the beginning of that question, but real estate taxes, you know, overall the state during the Walker administration and Republican leadership, there were tax cuts passed, but some folks were still saying that their real estate taxes were going up. There's a lot that goes into that. Senator Smith, anything in general
yeah,
to tell him?
Yeah, I'm glad that came up because I heard all last year from during on the campaign trail from Republicans bragging that they eliminated property tax. They didn't explain it. They just said, we eliminated property tax. Well, if you look on your property tax bill, the state box is zero. They eliminated the state portion. So now the state's not, and of course, with the school funding formula as it is, it's really late. It's really up to the school boards and local jurisdictions to actually get their money through their property tax increases. And that's something that needs to be looked at and or explained and be fair about that. If legislators aren't going to do their job, they're dropping the ball and leaving it up to the local jurisdictions to have to do it through property tax.
Representative Romaine Quinn, what do you tell Jim in Polk County? I want one more question for both of you, so if you could be brief.
Yep. Well, we've made a concerted effort over the last 4 years I've been in, 8 years, to again freeze or lower property taxes. And frankly, as a percentage of income across the state, they're lower now than they were in 2010. So, yes, we have been freezing and holding the line. I would just say I can't imagine an increase like that. So I don't know what happened in the school district or if he got reassessed or what, but I would definitely look into that. Don't sell yet. If you want to call our office as well, we do work with a lot of people and a lot of assessors in different parts of the district, but that's an astronomical increase that should not have happened, and we're happy to look into that as well.
It's probably a mistake for me to ask, but because we're so short on time, Representative Quinn, let's start with you. Where do you stand on medical marijuana?
I am for it.
Oh, I love it. Brief, brevity.
Oh,
Jeff Smith.
That's an easy one. Yes, I'm for it as well.
Okay. Well, now...
Now what are you going to do with all this time?
Yeah, all this time. All right. Well, with that, I want to thank our guest, Jeff Smith. He's the state senator for the 31st State Senate District. His district includes Pepin and Buffalo counties, parts of Pierce, Eau Claire, Trempealeau, and Jackson counties, and Dunn County. Don't forget about Dunn County. Representative Romaine Quinn is of the 75th State Assembly District. That includes Barron County, Southern Washburn County, and parts of Polk and St. Croix County. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Monday morning. Have a safe and productive week.